Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
It was earlier today on ESPN that Brian Windhorst said this about the NBA runner-ups. Here was Windhorst earlier.
The situation is still in flux. One of the things that is being discussed right now is that the Golden State Warriors would offer Kevin Durant a five-year contract, $57 million extra that he could get with signing elsewhere, let him rehab, and then work with him to be traded, potentially to New York, potentially to somewhere else, be their way to sort of take care of him monetarily after what he just went through and also protect the franchise to get some assets. If that happens, the Knicks would be in tremendous position to get back into it because they're going to have these some young assets plus cap space. I agree that overall the Knicks' future, it looks okay over the next few years, but I don't know if they're going to hit the grand slam. 2 weeks ago, I could have explained to you how they could have gotten Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. And when you think of that, you're thinking you're winning the championship next year. So the reality now is just altered from that possibility.
Now, this news didn't shock you. It wasn't out of the realm where someone like maybe me being a bit naive would be like, oh, okay, this is a bit interesting, but this wasn't shocking to you.
Sign and trades happen all the time, but this is not a necessarily sign and trade. This is what Golden State wants, an ideal situation for Golden State, because what they get an opportunity is to rehab him and try to convince him, a la Anthony Davis right now, well, before he got traded, convince him to stay. Convince him that we've done what we had to. And if he doesn't want to stay, then we'll trade him. But there's no guarantee that he'll go where he wants to go. There are two New York markets with assets or other teams that have assets. And what I know about the NBA, there's no guarantee that Kevin Durant will be traded where he wants to. It's about all about the Golden State Warriors. They'll have all the leverage. They'll have the ability to play with his season when he's available. And it just gives them more time. It just helps them out. It doesn't help Kevin Durant out. That $47 million, he'll make that regardless in any other city he goes to. But if I'm the Knicks, I'll keep my assets and sign them myself. Why do I have to work with you?
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's where this is all where the crux of this is that it's who wants this. Because on the outside, looking in, you're saying, oh, Kevin Durant can get the most money and get to go where he wants to go. So this must be a Kevin Durant thing. But this is a solely Golden State Warriors sort of deal, because they're the ones that would be losing Kevin Durant and not getting anything in return.
Right.
They're the ones that also would be on the hook if you keep Kevin Durant and you don't know how he's going to respond from his Achilles injury.
Right. They're the ones that's going to have to paying Steph Curry, going to have to play Klay Thompson, are going to be stuck with Draymond Green in free agency in a year. They're the ones that have problems with their cap and they don't have any assets to move around or be able, the ability to sign people right now. So that works in their favor. And Kevin Durant is ultimately thinking about himself, because when the last time he thought about Golden State, look where it got him.
The LeBron trade that people don't realize happened to the Heat was strictly LeBron was going to Miami.
Right.
Like that was
a way for LeBron to get where he wanted to
go. Yes.
At that time.
And this is nothing like that at all.
No.
And that's where when you look at, and the Cavs are, okay, the LeBron could get this money. He was going to Miami, made the announcement.
Miami had a clear space.
Yeah.
They needed the space to be able to sign LeBron. So it worked for both parties. But this doesn't work for New York, because New York now can keep Knox and Barrett and whoever they sign or nurture and grow and have Kevin Durant. Like, why would I help you, Golden State? I mean, you guys have had your run. You had your window.
How much do you think what happened in the finals, not the injury, what I'm talking about is, because I think it does have something to do with it, when you saw the makeup of the Golden State team when Kevin Durant went down, and all of a sudden that bench, I know there were other injuries, but that bench became a lot thinner. I think that this has something to do with them of like, all right, we kind of need to rebuild 4 through 10 or 11 on this team, if we're really going to compete for a championship.
That's what happens when you're top heavy, and that's what teams that are building like the Lakers are building. Like, that's what happens when you put all your money into a few guys and you try to piece together your bench. That's unfortunately, you put all the pressure on those guys to stay healthy, and this is a business that guys have, injuries that sit them down for a year or 6 months. Unfortunately, if they have to play a lot of minutes to keep you in contention from something, you put a lot of wear and tear on their body, and you put them at risk of not being able to help you out when you need them to because you have so much money committed to them. So, yeah, that was the prime example. They had to commit money to Kevin Durant, commit money to Draymond, commit money to Klay, and commit money to Steph. And then now you piece together your bench, and you got money in Andre Iguodala, who's ultimately possibly thinking about retiring. Sean Livingston thinking about retiring. Those guys have to play more minutes. Those guys are not able to play more minutes. They were comfortable in the set of minutes they were playing when they had dominant players on the court. So now it just puts a strain on them, and they seem a little bit more vulnerable.
I know I'm going to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I understand where the Warriors were coming from with those names. Like if you could get DeMarcus Cousins on that deal, you're going to do it. I didn't think it would work out for them. Not that DeMarcus Cousins would get hurt. What's that?
It didn't work out.
Yeah, it didn't work out. It's you can't blame them for being like, this is our core, and you know what? Iggy's been here for the run. Sean Livingston's been here for the run. You can't blame them, but... And this is where I'm going to speak out of the other side of my mouth. For an organization that prides themselves and has the bravado to talk about a forward-thinking organization, I think that they were caught up in their core and that there wasn't a lot of – I mean, because I know Looney got hurt, but there just wasn't a lot there for them. I brought up the point yesterday. They had to go to Australia to bring in Andrew Bogut to provide some defense at the hoop. That's never a good sign when you're trying to win an NBA title.
But let's be realistic, right? Guys, teams only have a window, and teams are paying for a window. You pay during the window and you pay after the window, but you want a 4 to 5 year window of trying to win a championship or get multiple championships. That's all you can build in the way this league is built. You have teams that are saying we're trying to build for longevity and keep young stars. That's just not the way it goes. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at all the championship teams that have had multiple championships or been in contention for multiple championships. It was over a time period. It was over the Miami Heat 4 years. The Cavs last year, 4 years. The Boston Celtics, they had a 3 year window. The Golden State Warriors, one of the best teams that we've seen in a long time, they have a 5 year window, and you'll see it crumble. You don't have 10 years of young people in your team and stars now. It's hard to build. If you want to have a serious window at winning a championship, you'll have a short span. You have to do what you have to, pay the people you have to. You see the Lakers doing that right now, trying to take advantage of this short 3 to 4 window that you have LeBron James, Anthony Davis in it, get a younger star. But they'll have to start doing some other things once LeBron James leaves. But they're paying for a 3 to 4 year window of winning a championship, and then it'll be a success. So what Golden State did, they had a success at what they were supposed to do. Teams are trying to get just a window of winning. You can't have a decade of winning. It's just not logical right now.
That's what's so amazing about the NFL is where if you have a quarterback, where you would think like in the NBA because it is so individual and player driven and star driven that's the case. But it's actually the case in the NFL where if you have your quarterback, your window doesn't mean you're going to win Super Bowls, but your window can be a lot longer because of that one guy. In the NBA, it's just not the case.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He is Dante Jones. I'm sitting in for Doug Gottlieb as well as I'm Dan Beyer. Glad to have you here and joining us now on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Guy I haven't talked to in a long time, but it's great to have him on. Stadium basketball analyst Jeff Goodman joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
What's up, man? It has been a while. How are you?
Doing well. Dante and I are hanging out, getting ready for an NBA draft. But, of course, NBA free agency seems to always gravitate towards everything. And Dante and I were just talking about championship windows and what the Warriors had and what the Rockets had. Is the Boston Celtics window closed with everything that has gone on so far in Massachusetts? Is that window closed with Kyrie leaving and Al Horford likely out?
I don't know if the window is closed completely because you can never count Danny Ainge out from doing something crazy and getting back in there. Remember, they didn't think there was a window in Boston. And then obviously they traded Pierce and Garnett and fleeced Billy King. And then they fleeced Brian Colangelo as well and got Tatum in that deal with Markelle Fultz. So I don't know if it's ever completely closed. They still have Jason Tatum, who I think can be a superstar in the league. They still have Gordon Hayward, who, if he can get back to closer to what he was, which was an all-star in Utah, there's a chance there. You know, think about it. Obviously, the Horford loss is the one that hurts. Nobody's really sad to see in Boston Kyrie Irving go. He became kind of unlikable, and certainly the chemistry was not exactly great there with Kyrie. But Horford, it was a tough deal because obviously he's been offered a four-year deal in excess of $100 million. And if you're Danny Ainge, are you willing to give that to him when he'll be 37 years old at the end of that deal?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's no need for panic in Boston at this point in time because you do have a young asset in Jason Tatum, and you have Jaylen Brown. Yep. Al Horford was a big part of their success. He's always been a winner wherever he's going. He's set the tone. He's an absolute professional. He's always about winning. Those guys have, especially with Gordon Hayward, who'll be a year better, a year more confident. It seems like that is a situation ideal for winning. Subtraction sometimes is the best thing for an organization. You can have too much talent. I think Terry Rozier would be a great fit at point guard because he sets the tone defensively. He brings energy. He gives energy to other teammates. Like, I think they're in a position with their system to still be successful, to be as good as they were this year. But I think it lies in Al Horford, a presence like Al Horford, a professional like Al Horford, who comes to play every game, every year. You know what you're going to get from him. And he's happy in being himself. He doesn't want to be more than what he is. And that's just a winner.
But you know what? You know what the deal is, Dante? The hard part is, even with Al Horford in that locker room, and he's elite level, right? Elite level character, all that. Think about the chemistry was not good. Now, again, largely because of Kyrie.
Facts.
I think Rozier is going to be the key to this team going forward. I do. I think Danny Ainge is going to have to match whatever he's offered as a restricted free agent. You know, hoping it's probably going to be somewhere in like a 13, maybe $15 million a year, something like that, 345. I think they have to match it. And they're going to play fast now. They're going to have to, which they really didn't do with Kyrie. It doesn't really fit Kyrie as well, right? Kyrie wants to play more in the half court. Now they can play fast with Rozier and try to get back to the way they were a couple of years ago with Jaylen Brown. It's terrific in transition. That's where he thrives. Tatum's good no matter how you want to play him. Hayward, I think the same thing. But now you got to get a big. You got to get a big somehow to be able to kind of fill the void of Horford. And you're not going to find a big who did everything Horford did on both ends of the court and in the locker room. You're just not.
How much of Jeff Goodman, by the way, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. He's Dante Jones. I'm Dan Byer, sitting in for Doug Gottlieb today here on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Now there's reports that maybe the Nets aren't as in love with Kyrie because they wouldn't be able to bring in Kevin Durant. How much is there truth to that, or is it more about all of the negativity that seems to be pouring out and that Boston, as you said, was more than happy to maybe see him leave, that maybe they aren't as high on bringing him in?
Well, I had heard from a source that the Knicks, when it was all out there about the Knicks with KD and Kyrie, that the Knicks really didn't want Kyrie unless it was with KD, that they didn't want Kyrie on his own. And you wonder, and I don't have great info on this intel on with the Nets, but you wonder, obviously they got to be a little bit worried here because it's a very similar situation than the Celtics a year and a half ago. Great chemistry, overachieved, a bunch of kind of tough guys who just, you know, wanted to go to battle and got the most out of their talent. It's a very similar situation with the Nets team this past year. And if you're Sean Marks, you got to be a little bit worried of bringing in Kyrie. Now, if you can bring in Kyrie and KD, anybody would do that. I mean, anybody in the league's going to do that. But if it's just Kyrie, you got to be a little bit concerned with everything that you've heard. And the fact that, again, you heard it in Cleveland. And then when he got to Boston, it was like, okay, you know what? Maybe he'll mature. Maybe he'll grow up. This is the perfect situation for Kyrie. He couldn't have asked for a better situation than in Boston, where he's got a coach in Brad Stevens that lets Marcus Smart jack threes at a crazy rate. Like, the freedom he gives players And I've never heard anybody say a bad word about Brad Stevens. And it didn't even work out in Boston. So you got to be a little bit concerned if you're Sean Marks.
Yeah, if you're Sean Marks, you got to look at the situation like, we already have somebody as good as Kyrie. Well, we had somebody as good as Kyrie in D'Angelo Russell. He took us to the playoffs. He was a solid citizen, a solid teammate. We've had success with him.
Yep.
We'll be taking a gamble and taking somebody just like D'Angelo, and we will be more safer. We know what we have. We know the commodity we have. We're confident and comfortable with him. Why take a chance with Kyrie if he's not with somebody that can come in and we know can lead and lead us to possibly having a window at a championship? So I understand how they are looking at the situation. They need somebody else to come in with Kyrie because at best he's the best, second best option available. It's not a detriment to his talent. It's just that he's not the one that's going to lead you to a championship. But if he's your second best guy, you do have a championship window.
No, you're right. You can absolutely. I'm with you. I mean, he's done it before. I think it's comical, the people that are trying to say that Kyrie could end up in L.A. with LeBron again. I don't think he wants to be his little brother again.
Oh, I do think. I'm big on that one, Jeff. Let me tell you why.
You really do.
Because now that you look at the landscape right now, it's about how I'm remembered. And when you look at the championships and you look at the guys who have multiple championships, yeah, when this thing is done and said, you're going to say how many rings did you have? Were you number one, number two? Were you a champion? Scottie Pippen was a number two his whole career, but he's remembered by everyone of that era because he's a winner. And if you don't go to a situation where you'll win, you will be forgotten. There's so many NBA guys who put up points, who've made all-star teams, that you have a hard time remembering what they actually did, what their teams really did. But the champions are forever remembered. And if you have a window to be a part of something special, you at least have to think about it, because him and LeBron have had success. And Anthony Davis, you have to say he's better than Kevin Love, unfortunately, who I love to death. But Anthony Davis is a different type of talent. They could go and do something really special if you put those talents together.
Do you think that Kyrie is mature enough to understand what you just said?
I think his business side is mature enough now. I think experience has taught him that we at least have to look at it, because running my own show is not what it's hyped up to be. There are guys who run their own shows who get a lot of points, and that's a lot of a headache. But being in the finals every year is a different life. And with us three and LeBron and AD at your doorstep, with us three, we could be in the finals every year for the next 4 years, and this could be your show going forward, and you could be the show in L.A., and I could leave in 3 years. I could give you the keys when you could have the keys now. I know LeBron James' mindset is not one of, I'm going to be the number one option 2 years from now. But what I am going to be is the most dangerous guy on the floor. My mind is stronger than anybody in basketball, and I'll be able to dominate, but there'll be guys ahead of me on my team that have to carry the load.
He's Dante Jones. I'm Dan Byer. Jeff Goodman joins us here on Fox Sports Radio. Guys, clarify this for me, and Jeff, I want to start with you. We sat here for the last couple of days of being like, wow, Chris Paul, the same old Chris Paul. Is Kyrie Irving just – When will he ever change? Because it's not just Boston, and it's not just Cleveland. Just things don't, at some point wherever he is, things don't go well. I mean, even the season at Duke, and you guys would know this a lot more than me, injured that year, they get bounced in the Sweet 16. At what point do you start to recognize? Jeff, you just said that he's not mature enough to, but I mean, it always seems that there's something with Kyrie. Why is that?
Well, like Dante said, listen, he has a chance to change the narrative here, right? If he goes somewhere, accepts his role, becomes a number three for the next couple of years behind LeBron and AD, and they win titles, yeah, the whole narrative changes. Now, I don't know if the Lakers can even afford. They got to make some moves here to be able to afford to take Kyrie on. And then how do they fill out their roster? You've also got three injury-prone guys. I don't want to call LeBron injury-prone. He's not. He got injured this past year. But AD and Kyrie, I mean, that's the other thing. You still got to worry about Kyrie's longevity and his knees and them holding up. I don't think Kyrie and Chris Paul are similar in terms of, how do I say it? I think Kyrie kind of says what's on his mind. And again, he's moody, but he doesn't hide his feelings. He's not phony. I think a lot of people in the league feel like Chris Paul is a little bit fraudulent and phony. Not with his work ethic, not with how hard he plays, not any of that, but there's a lot of people who don't get along with Chris Paul because, again, they think he's a little bit fraudulent in some of his words.
He's Jeff Goodman for Stadium. Find him on Twitter, at Goodman Hoops. Listen to his podcast, Good and Plenty. Who's the guest this week?
I had Jason Tatum last week. I'll do a whole draft recap, kind of my take on the draft tonight. I'll have that up on the podcast in the morning.
You know, I do actually want to ask you about the draft. I probably should have done that since we just sat here and waxed poetically about Kyrie for the last 10 minutes.
Listen, free agency, that stuff is way more entertaining than tonight's draft. Like, we'll see what happens, but it's not like tonight's draft is, we know 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I mean, we know it. The draft starts at 4.
But I was trying to explain, that tonight's draft sets the tone for free agency, and a lot of things can change according to tonight's draft. On what's going to take place in free agency. So this is our big warm-up to get ready for where people go, because this is going to set the tone for a lot of people's assets going forward.
I find it funny that the, as Jeff said, it's we know 1, 2, and 3, but that the fourth pick isn't the player that gets picked is going to tell us more about what is happening with that pick. Right? Right? I mean,
yeah, but let's look at a situation like a guy like Terry Rozier, who I'm high on, or D'Angelo Russell, right? If the teams that need point guards pick point guards and invest in them in the draft, then that means that they won't throw crazy money at Terry Rozier. And I think that he's going to – Terry or DeAndre, and they have – like the Lakers would be perfect for either one of those two guys. But if they go and pick a point guard, it sets the tone for what their next need is going to be or where that's going to go.
Well, let me ask Jeff this. And, Jeff, I know you're generous with your time, and we'll let you run after this. But if the Pelicans take, say, Darius Garland at number 4 – and now you've just done a deal likely with Lonzo Ball, doesn't that say something about what could happen with that pick? Or
True.
The Lakers take Garland at 4. Doesn't that say something?
Well, here's what I think, and what I've been told, is David Griffin wants to move that number 4 pick. He understands that right now there's not a ton of demand for the number 4 pick. There's not a big difference between 4 and 10 in this draft. So he's trying to move down. He's hoping to get maybe a player on a good contract, you know, Robert Covington type, something like that. Minnesota's at 11. Some deal like that. Atlanta, 8 and 10 to move up. I actually think that's the perfect marriage here. Atlanta could use a guy like DeAndre Hunter, right? They need defense.
True story.
They need length. They need another guy, a big wing like that. Hunter could help. And in return, then if you're David Griffin, you got 8 and 10. And maybe you could pull two more starters out of 8 and 10. Maybe you can get a big in Jackson Hayes and then get another wing like Rui Hachimura at 10. And I think both teams would benefit. Chicago, if they love Darius Garland, anybody loves Darius Garland, maybe they move up. And that's where Griff is hoping that as we get close to the draft here, the value goes up for that number 4 pick. Somebody wants a Darius Garland. That's the guy that I think will create more interest for this pick if he's going to deal it.
Me and Hartman were talking this weekend about that type of swap from Atlanta, taking swapping that number 4 pick for 8 and 10, taking somebody like Brandon Ingram, who's going to be stuck in New Orleans between Zion and whatever they bring in, and going and get a 4. Yeah. And if you could take Brandon Ingram in a 10th pick and go get Robert Covington, that's a win, because you still got the 8th pick and you can get what you ultimately wanted with the 8th pick. So I think that's a scenario, that 8th and 10 swap, that's a scenario where you can package stuff that you already have with one of those picks and still ultimately accomplish your goal, or take them, like you said, and go get a Cam Reddish and a big man with the number 10 and take a gamble on one of the players that you think has a high upside but might not be valued as much by other teams. So, yeah. Yeah, swapping that for the 8 and 10, I think, is what David Griffin is going to end up ultimately doing.
I do, too.
We shall.
I think Atlanta right now is offering 8 and 17. That's not enough, but I think if they get to 8 and 10, I think then David Griffin makes the move.
Jeff Goodman, we appreciate the time. Of course, follow him on Twitter at Goodman Hoops. Check out the podcast and read him at Stadium, our basketball analyst. Appreciate it, Jeff. Good to talk to you.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
The NBA draft has definitely changed I remember, like, I vividly remember the night that Chris Hardaway and Anthony, Chris Weber and Anthony Hardaway were traded for each other. When Orlando had won the lottery for the second straight year, they had the number one overall pick. Magic take Chris Weber. Golden State ends up taking Penny Hardaway. And then you have that swap. Like, those are the things that I remember. And Dante, I also remember the times when maybe at the sixth overall pick, you still could get a guy that maybe could be the face of your franchise, maybe a guy that could be the Robin to the Batman that's already there as you're trying to build something. And I don't see that, not only in the 2019 draft, but really in any recent draft. Once you get out of the top two or three, there is no, well, this guy is really a great fit. This is going to be the guy. It's all about possibility and potential. And I don't think it was like that 20 years ago, 25 years ago. This of what we've got in the NBA is just all about potential. Maybe it's how the game changed, but we don't see the franchise cornerstones being drafted. You're just keeping your fingers crossed, hoping you're drafting those cornerstones for the franchise.
I kind of disagree.
Okay.
Because, listen.
Let's hear it.
When the Spurs drafted Kawhi, they knew something we didn't know. I was on the Pacers at that point in time, traded George Hill for him. Like, they wanted that pick. They wanted that guy.
Mm-hmm.
They knew about it. When the Pacers drafted Paul George, he wasn't a top two pick, but they knew he was going to be the cornerstone for their
You really thought that they were like, this is going to, like, Paul George is going to be the all-star player. Really, you think at that point?
No, Larry Bird told me that. Like, listen, we got a kid that is going to be an all-star. We need some help in developing him, but he's going to be an all-star in our league. And you might have to lose some minutes to him because we have to get him going and start his trajectory early. So, like, they knew these things. Jimmy Butler was a top 20 pick. Like, they're guys who've been all-stars and have been, like, foundational pieces that have not been in top five picks.
And even
those top five picks, sometimes, most of the time, they don't even really work out.
With the way that the NBA draft is, it's about trying to draft the guy to hit that home run. I think you would try to get guys that we knew more about the college players. 25 years ago. I mean, we knew Chris Weber spent 2 years in college. You knew what he was going to do. You knew what Penny Hardaway was going to do. Heck, kind of knew what Calbert Chaney was going to do, like, back in those days. Here, all of a sudden, last year, if you're drafting 10, you're hoping Zach Collins in the 2017 draft works out for Portland. Like it's hopefully he'll end up being a guy that we can use. But I don't think they're saying, like, all right, we got Zach Collins. He's going to be our guy. And I just don't think that in the draft, like, yeah, there may be a Paul George. Giannis was taken 15th.
Giannis,
we hope he
explodes. Klay Thompson, Steph Curry. Like, they were looking at these guys, like, you know, Bradley Beal wasn't a top two pick.
Four?
Okay. You said out of one and two, like, you know, we're looking at cornerstones. Nah, you can find these people. It's all about you doing your homework and you know what you're drafting and not jumping on waves and, like, oh, this guy is great. Because even who was the Cavs pick? Anthony Bennett.
Yeah.
I was the man at home screaming, like, no way. Like, what are you guys doing? They thought they had their cornerstone or diamond in the rough. They messed that totally up. And just because you draft somebody number one does not – you put too much pressure on them. Like, even – let's look at Zion. R.J. Barrett was supposed to be the number one pick this draft. So you could possibly get the best player in the draft at – number three, or who could be the best, who people have thought to be the best. It's a possibility. Zion has talent you can't pass up on, and it's an opportunity that you really can't miss. But there's still room for guys to get it. You look like a guy like Cam Reddish, who the people in his class say he was the toughest guy for them to guard. That's his peers. You got to look at his peers rank him rather than where all the guys who speak on potential, because those guys can get out of control sometimes.
Well, I also think that the difference is there are front offices that know what they're doing, and there's some that don't.
There's a very few front offices that know what they're doing, and they live off of those front offices that don't know what they're doing. Spurs know what they're doing. They always seem to find the right pick at the right spot. You got David Griffin. He knows what he's doing over there. You have Masai Ujiri. Like Pascal Siakam. He could end up being the best player on that Toronto Raptors team. And Masai was deliberate about getting that kid who he saw something in and saw his growth and saw that he'd only been playing basketball, did his homework for playing basketball for 5 years, did his homework on the kid, knew his work ethic. Like, you got to really do your homework and not ride waves or not depend on people who are really not doing their jobs.
If I were to ask you, by the way, he's Dante Jones, I'm Dan Beyer, this is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Out of the last six NBA drafts, of the top 10 picks, so of the 60 players.
You know this already, so you.
I do.
You're setting me up.
Okay, no, I'm not trying to set you up, but I think that these numbers are interesting. How many all-stars do you think came from those 60 picks over the last 6 years for the top 10 picks? And it's not a matter of if it's right or wrong. It's just
how many all-stars are the last 6 years? So
yeah.
60 people, I think. First time or multiple all-stars?
Just could be a multiple all-star, but have been named to an all-star team, at least one all-star team.
Let's say
15. Okay. There are six.
Okay. Okay, but so can I give you another guy overlooked that will be an all-star coming up? Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
He's on track to be the best shooting guard in the game.
Very good. Yes, absolutely.
He
could be a great. I'm a Devin Booker fan.
It's not, but it's what I need you to understand is not. It's also fit. It's the organization putting the right piece around him for them to be successful. So it's not necessarily the pick. It's the organization's job to make that pick be what it's supposed to be.
There's also a logjam of really darn good veterans that's tough to break through. Like in the Western Conference, when it was you still have that of breaking it up, but when you're trying to break through, when you have Harden, Steph, Westbrook, Damian Lillard. Like to get a spot on a Western Conference All-Star team is difficult if you're a backcourt player.
Right.
The point is, though, with this is there were six All-Stars. Only two of those players in that 60 have received any All-NBA notoriety. So the point is more of takes a long time. Like we're looking for these guys, and I felt like 20 and 25 years ago, these guys were immediately brought in. Penny Hardaway's playing in the finals with Shaq in 2 or 3 years. And I know it's a rare circumstance, but these guys were exploding on the scene a lot quicker. We don't have any all-star appearances from the last two NBA drafts. You only have Ben Simmons from the 2016 draft. And the only guys that have been drafted in the top 10, and that's what I'm talking about, because there are GMs that will find guys that work. Giannis was the 15th overall pick in 2013. Joel Embiid and Victor Oladipo are the only two top 10 picks of the last six drafts to receive all NBA recognition. It takes a while. It really does. Well, and that's the thing that I say about this of finding out who's going to make it, who's going to be surrounded by a good team. There's so much chance, and I'm using the air quotes on this, but it takes a while for these guys to develop, and that's also what's different from 20 years ago.
It's now hard to make it on an All-NBA, an All-Star team without winning.
Yeah.
And top 10 picks usually are not putting winning situations, so now the voters are counting winning and not just taking stats in consideration. And I think that was a thing of that time as well, of that era. If you were putting up great numbers and you were exciting to watch, you have an opportunity to probably make an all-star team or make an all-NBA team just because of what you were doing.
Sure.
But there's more attention paid to if they're in a winning situation. You look at the Atlanta Hawks. They got four All-Stars 1 year, and Kyle Korver was one of them.
Yeah.
And not saying he was a bad player, but he's not your all-star type of talent.
Yeah. Right.
Draymond Green has made an All-Star appearance because of winning. People are attaching winning to these accolades now, which kind of is pushing that envelope, because the top 10 picks are usually not in winning situations. Teams are tanking usually, and those top 10 teams are usually trying to get multiple picks. Like, it's a tough situation for a kid to be able to fight through that, because he may not be put in the right situation because the team is taking 3 years to build through the draft. Like, that is a process that goes building through the draft right now, and it doesn't come with winning, so then that puts them in a bad situation to get those accolades.
In 2016, Ben Simmons made an all-star game. From the 2015 draft, it was Kristaps Porzingis, Karl-Anthony Towns, and D'Angelo Russell who have been all-stars. I mentioned Joel Embiid. He's the only guy in the top 10 from 2014 to make an all-star team. Victor Oladipo, the only one from 2013. That 2012 draft that you kind of referenced, with Bradley Beal, had AD, Damian Lillard, and Andre Drummond all being named to all-star teams, and AD, Dame, and Drummond received all NBA notoriety.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We welcome in our good friend John Ramos, who's our technical producer, as he's going to be sitting in the hot seat to play a game that we like to call Keeping Up with the Joneses. Here it is again.
I miss you, John.
I miss you too, Dante. I'm ready to go. This is always a fun game.
So we have some notes about Dante's life. We also have some notes about Tommy Lee Jones's life and Julio Jones's life. So John's got to determine whether these scenarios have occurred to Dante Jones, Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones, or Oscar award-winning actor. Is that how I should say it, Johnny?
Sure.
Movie guy?
Yep,
Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
All right. John, in our first scenario in Keeping Up with the Joneses, which Jones has a son that had aspirations to be an F1 or IndyCar driver? Was it Tommy Lee Jones, Julio Jones, or Dante Jones?
That's a good first question, yes. I'm going to say that would be Tommy Lee Jones.
No, that is incorrect. It's Dante Jones.
Unfortunately, you don't listen to my show.
Hey, he puts it right on there.
In fairness, Dante, John hates Steve Hartman.
Oh.
my son, I took him to the Indy 500, and he fell in love with it. But now he's like 5'10 now, so I think those aspirations are going out the window. But he was enamored by the speed and everything, and he was like, he tried to change his career path at that point in time.
Wow.
The Indy 500 now with back seats. So, to fit a 5'10 teenager in, yeah. Keeping Up with the Joneses, John is 0-1. Okay, which Jones speaks fluent Spanish?
Julio Jones.
You would think, right, by the name.
Got him.
Got him. Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones. By the way, John put the Owen Jones so far with the number that he's gotten right.
Nope.
Oh, which Jones was once hurt falling off of a horse? Was it Tommy Lee Jones, Julio Jones, or Dante Jones?
Well, we've done Dante, we've done Tommy Lee, so I'm guessing it's Julio this time.
It was Tommy Lee Jones.
No. That's a trick question.
he is a polo aficionado and fell off a horse once and was
Don't
injured.
Take him to Vegas. No.
The cause of the accident? Horseplay.
Okay.
Okay. Whose first name is actually a nickname? Is it Dante Jones, Tommy Lee Jones, or Julio Jones? First name is actually a nickname.
I'm going to say the names to myself. Like, what would be a nickname? Julio. Hey, Julio. I would say Dante.
It is Julio Jones.
I should have thought my first try.
Are you serious? Dante is a nickname?
Julio.
You seen how it's spelled? It can't be a nickname spelled that way.
His real first name is David.
Ridiculous. Oh. No, we'll call him Dante for short.
Yeah, yeah. Julio Jones' real name is Quintoris Lopez Jones.
Oh, I'd say keep that first one.
Yeah, his mom nicknamed him Julio in seventh grade.
What is it again? What is it?
Quintoris.
Oh, that's a great
Quintoris
one.
Lopez Jones.
I feel better about mine now.
What Jones is a novice bowler?
I'd say Dante.
Strike! Yes, you got it right, Johnny. Not strike one, like you hit a strike as a bowler.
Yes, very nice.
You like to hit the lanes?
Finally, yes. Yeah. My grandfather spent a lot of time bowling. Even like my oldest son is a really, 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 really good bowler. But we spend a lot of time on the lanes when we're not playing basketball.
All right, John, you got two more. You ready?
I am ready, yes.
What Jones has recently been spotted wearing a fanny pack?
I know Katina Mobley wore a fanny pack this week during the show.
During the show?
Yes.
Yes.
Who was he keeping on him? Couldn't sit it down, huh?
Okay. I'm going to say Julio.
Dante Jones, yes.
Stand up.
Yep.
I had it coming in. Not right now. I had it coming in.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. I put mine down when I came in.
That's right.
Why keep it the whole show? It's too much swag walking around.
John is the Miami Marlins of this game.
The
winning percentage is strong. All right, final one. You ready?
Oh, yes.
Once lost a $100,000 diamond while jet skiing.
Dan, I'm going to give you credit. These are the hardest questions in the games you've played so far.
They are.
They're really hard. I'm going to say Julio.
That is correct. Okay. That is correct. Was wearing diamond earrings.
I was looking at you like, how did you know? But my wife lost a wedding ring in the ocean one time. Almost like same situation.
Really?
Almost killed her.
Oh, jeez. Did you see it like floating down and
no,
then it disappeared?
No, what happened is I was at Andre Iguodala's wedding, and me, Draymond, and Jermaine O'Neal took our wives, and we went on a little little boat, and we were hanging out, and we all jumped into the water, and then my wife was swimming, looking me in my eyes, and she said, uh-oh. Like, what are you talking about? She's paddling, looking at me, uh-oh, my ring just fell off. I said, what do you mean? And I dove down, but it was over at that point in time.
That's why I tell my wife I never wear my ring. No, I'm kidding. Just kidding, Lisa. See, it's on here. By the way, I'll give you an easy one, John.
Okay.
Who played in a historic college football game where his team rallied from a late 16-point deficit to their rival? Historic college football game. Julio Jones.
Of the three?
Tommy Lee Jones.
I say Julio.
Tommy Lee Jones. I tricked you.
Got him.
Yeah. Yep. From Harvard. Yeah, he played at the Harvard-Yale game. Harvard beats Yale 29-29.
Sorry, buddy.
All right, he's Dante
Jones.
It was
fun, though.
Yes, you did. Hey, you got two. You know, the 2 out of 9 is not bad when you're coming off the bench to pinch hit.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.